Good morning, everyone. My name is Ganesh Srinivasan. I'm a program manager in the Windows Azure networking team, and I'm really happy to be here to talk to you all about the hybrid networking offerings we have in the platform. Now, I want to make this session as interactive as possible, so if you have any questions at any given point in time, please feel free to interrupt me and have your questions answered at that point in time. So let's see what I'm going to talk about today. So I'm going to talk about virtual networks, give you a very high-level introduction of what virtual networks is. I'll then spend some time talking about some of the ArcLink capabilities we recently introduced in our platform, following which I'll talk about a new service that we released in preview last month, which is virtual networks point-to-site capability. This is primarily targeted towards dev and test scenario, and it's intended to replace one of the solutions we had in the past called Windows Azure Connect. We'll talk about the differences between them. We'll then talk about site-to-site connectivity and wrap it up with a few demos where I put all these things together. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. And as I mentioned earlier, please feel free to interrupt me at any given point in time if you have any questions. So virtual networks. You know, if you rewind the clocks by about a year last year, we were at TechEd last year announcing the preview of infrastructure services. And earlier this year, we announced general availability of infrastructure services. We started that project out as just the ability to create virtual machines in Windows Azure. And then we realized that, you know, for it to be more usable, we needed this connection between the premises and the cloud to make it really usable. And VMs without networks to connect virtual machines was pretty much useless. So virtual machines, the investments we made on virtual machines had to, you know, really, you know, for it to really shine, we had to make equivalent investments in networks, and that's how virtual networks came into existence. Now, when we talk about virtual networks and what it has to offer, we treat them as, you know, on-ramps to enable people to migrate their applications from their premises to the cloud. So it could be done in several ways. First of all, it creates a virtual private network in the cloud. So the virtual private network is a network for which you bring your own IP address space, so it's like your network. It looks and feels like your on-prem network with private IP addresses and so on. So it's a familiar networking concept that you could use to start deploying virtual machines onto. The second thing is that the virtual network connects to your premises using a site-to-site VPN. So you can still continue to run applications that have dependencies on certain services that are in your premises. So it's like that extension of your premises into the cloud. So the way we'd ask you to think about this solution is as a natural extension of your enterprise or your on-premises network into the cloud. So anything that you could do and the way the network will look and feel once you've connected your on-premises network to the cloud would be as though this is an extension sitting in a different location. So you could treat it like just another branch office that's part of your core corporate network. So by extending the network between your premises and the cloud, you now have an extended domain, and you could pretty much run applications that are distributed between the premises and the cloud, and that's what we refer to as hybrid. In addition to running it in this hybrid mode where you have connectivity between your premises and the cloud, you can run virtual networks as a standalone entity in the cloud. It has its own benefits. We'll talk about them in a minute. So, as I just mentioned in the previous slide, you could have a virtual network run as a standalone entity. And there are a lot of benefits for doing that. First of all, if you've traditionally used Windows Azure in the past, we had the concept of cloud services or hosted services where all VMs and past tenants that were deployed within a single cloud service could talk to one another, which meant that if you had multiple services that were using a shared database tier, or you wanted to implement a monitoring service that had to monitor all your instances across all these services, all that had to happen through the public internet or through the public IP addresses that we assigned for your service. So a lot of people were not very happy about the security mechanism that it offered. And to address that, we said, let's define this virtual network, which is like a large pool of IP addresses. It's a logical representation of a network. And any service you put into the virtual network can talk to one another using its private IP addresses. So you don't really require to go through the public IP address. It's a trusted extension of your trust domain, and your trust boundary is a virtual network boundary. So it basically enables you to create this logical network. You bring the IP addresses, and you don't have to worry about IP address overlaps and, you know, others having the ability to detect your virtual machines. It gives you a dedicated view of the network that you have in Windows Azure, and it makes it look and feel as though it's a dedicated network that we run specifically for you. Now, in that network, just to simplify placement and address predictability of virtual machines, you can actually carve out multiple IP subnets within them and actually map your virtual machines or pass roles into these virtual networks. So the cool thing about virtual networks is the fact that once you've specified subnets and you place virtual machines in them, we actually assign IP addresses to virtual machines and pass service instances using DHCP, and we sort of offer an infinite DHCP lease to that virtual machine. So once it gets an IP address, the IP address stays with the virtual machine for its lifetime. There are a few small caveats there. Recently, we introduced a new feature that allows you to stop a virtual machine, which also causes us to stop billing for the virtual machine. Now, we were billing for virtual machines when we stopped it in the past because we were still holding on to the resources we allocated for you on that particular cluster. Now, with the stopped billing feature, we actually completely deallocate the resources in the cluster, which means we also deallocate the IP addresses. So that's one specific case where we do not guarantee IP address persistence. So if you're running a production application, you can stop the virtual machine, but make sure you stop it in a way where you don't deallocate resources. Deallocating resources will cause the IP addresses to be released. And a workaround for that, for you to be able to have a predictable IP address, is to place each virtual machine in its own subnet, so you know for a fact that you're the only virtual machine in that subnet, and you always get that IP address. It sounds a little hacky, but solves the problem for the time being. Another important thing that, you know, glues a lot of applications together is, you know, DNS. You typically don't want to refer to each of the other virtual machines in your service using IP addresses natively. So you want a nice naming solution around it. We have a good naming solution, a set of naming solutions available for virtual networks. The first thing is we provide a multi-tenant DNS service as part of the platform. So if you were to build a cloud service in Azure, there are actually two DNS services that are in picture. When you create a cloud service, we assign a public IP address for your cloud service, and you give it a public name. So typically, your cloud service would look like foo.cloudapp.net, and that gets mapped to a public IP address. This gets exposed to the internet, and we actually program a DNS service to actually maintain that A record between your public IP address and the foo.cloudapp.net. So anyone accessing your service could go resolve the service using that name and get to the public IP address. Now, the second thing is, within a virtual network, if you have multiple virtual machines deployed, you just want to use the machine's names to resolve each other. So for that, we actually run a multi-tenant DNS service, and we call it Azure Provider DNS. So if you're building, let's say, a cloud service with 10 virtual machines, once you've deployed those 10 virtual machines within a single cloud service, you could refer to each other using just the host name. We make sure that the requests are authenticated and that, you know, the name, the DNS lookups are authenticated, and that only people within the same tenant can actually resolve these names, and you should be able to talk to other virtual machines just by host name. In addition to that, we've had a lot of demand for people to run, you know, their own domain controllers in Windows Azure. You know, when you look at a multi-tier application that people typically run, identity is a key aspect of it, and the domain controllers and DNS servers are really key to make that happen. So for you to be able to run a DNS server in Azure is an important capability. So we have this ability for you to bring your own DNS server to Windows Azure. What it means is you provide us with an IP address of a DNS server, which could either be running in your premises or in the public internet or within the virtual network as a virtual machine. Every time we bring up any virtual machine within that virtual network or a pass instance within the virtual network, we actually pass on the DNS server's IP addresses through DHCP. So by default, when they come up, they could domain join or they could talk to your DNS servers that you've specified. And if you want to access on-prem resources, all that could be programmed in the DNS server that you set up in Windows Azure. So in addition to that, I mentioned earlier that we extend the trust boundary. So it helps you do a few cool things. You can mix and match PaaS and IaaS. So if you're building a multi-tier service where your backend is a shared database, that's where your state is, and your frontend is pretty much stateless, instead of running virtual machines which have persisted state associated with them, you could actually take the same package and run them as web roles in Windows Azure. So it gives you the ability to scale the number of instances up and down based on your load and still have that connectivity to a backend database, which is infrastructure as a service. So if you're thinking of moving a service from your prem to the cloud, you know, in a phased migration approach, the first approach would be to move them all as virtual machines into the cloud. And then to truly get all the benefits of what the cloud has to offer, you could consider moving certain tiers to pass role instances, and this technology enables you to mix and match services between, you know, between IaaS and PaaS. Now, we've designed our virtual networks to be in such a way where when you deploy a cloud service, it can still continue to have an internet-facing edge and have be part of a private network. We don't dual home the virtual machines, but we have a way where we can actually NAT traffic from the public internet through to your virtual machines. And you do that by actually defining endpoints on your virtual machines. So I'll show all these concepts when I do one of my demos, so it will get clearer to you. So basically, you have an internet-facing edge that's load balanced, and you have a private network. A lot of people had concerns on what would happen if I did that. How do I restrict traffic from the internet to my cloud service? And for that, we've actually introduced a new feature that enables you to set ACLs or access control lists on your endpoints that you define on your cloud service. So I'll show you a little bit of a demo on how that works as well. So just to recap what ACLs enables you to do, typically when you have virtual machines in Azure, by default, we close all ports to the public internet. And we only open up connectivity within your virtual network or within your cloud service. Now, when you expose, let's say you're building a multi-tier application and your front end is an IIS server that you want to put in the internet, or a pool of IIS servers that you want to put in the internet, you'd actually call define what is called as an endpoint in Windows Azure. I'll show you how to do that in the portal. But when you define an endpoint, we do a few things. First of all, we actually open up the infrastructure firewalls to allow traffic from any public IP address on that particular port. So if you're using, you know, HTTP traffic, you will open up port 80. On port 80, anyone from the public internet can connect to your service. So we open up the firewall. The second thing is if you have more than one instance of the server running, we will configure load balancing. We'll implicitly configure a load balancer that's a layer 3 load balancer. So we actually maintain flow state and actually direct flows to the appropriate virtual machine behind the load balancer. So that's what creating an endpoint does. But let's say you're creating an application that you want only a certain set of people to connect and you want to block traffic from another set of people. That was not possible a few months back. Now, you can do that in Azure today by actually defining an ACL on a particular endpoint. So this way, for a virtual machine, you can define, I think, up to 50 different endpoints. And on each endpoint, you can define a set of ACLs. An ACL is an access control list. It's a collection of rules it's a combination of permit and deny rules. So you could say, allow traffic from this particular address range, but deny traffic from this other address range. Or you could only say, allow traffic from this range, in which case we will deny the rest of the traffic. Or you would say, allow everything, but only deny these people, which is blacklisting. So we give you the ability to mix and match allow and deny rules on the input endpoint and define ACLs. So this way, if you're hosting an internet-facing application in the cloud that's also connected to your premises using the site-to-site connection, this will give you security on your endpoint, and you can restrict it to only a specific IP address range. So let me actually, before I go on to hybrid networking, let me give you a quick demo of all the topics that I talked about, and then we will move on to talking about hybrid and connectivity solutions in detail. So this is the Windows Azure portal. All the things that we talked about can be done here. And the portal, from our perspective, is just an application which actually calls a set of REST APIs that we publish in MSDN. So the portal is just an application that calls the APIs that we published. There are different kinds of wrappers that we support. So one thing is the portal. The second thing is we have PowerShell commandlets around all the REST APIs that we have so that you can easily script. We also have command line tools for Linux and other platforms. Mac and, you know, even Windows, we have command line tools. So we have tools using which you can do the same things that the portal can do. So for the first demo, I'm going to actually use PowerShell to show you how you can actually define ACLs. And going forward, for the rest of the demos, I'll actually use the portal to show you how you can configure virtual networks and so on. So let's assume you had a virtual machine. So this is the Windows Azure portal, and it lists out all the resources you have. And I'm going to pick this test VM2, which is a virtual machine that I've deployed, and I've configured it as an IIS server. So if I actually go into the properties of this virtual machine, this is the IP address of the service that's exposed to the public internet, and this is the URL using which I could actually connect to that IIS server. So if I connect to it, it goes to the IIS server. Now, let's say I wanted to restrict access to this IIS server to a box whose IP address I already know. So for that case, I've actually set up a machine in my office that's behind what is called as a DTAP, so it's directly connected to the internet. It bypasses all the CART firewalls. So I know its IP address. So I'm going to say only allow traffic or connectivity from that IP address and block the rest of the IP addresses. And that's how I want to define an ACL on this virtual machine. And I'm going to do that using PowerShell. So setting up PowerShell is extremely easy in Windows Azure. You download PowerShell commandlets. You know, we have a package that you download from windowsazure.com. Install it. Once you install it, there's a script that you can run to get yourself started. What it does is it helps you download your credentials from the Windows Azure portal. All it does is it installs a certificate in your subscription and installs the certificate in your local machine. And if you look at the first few lines in the commandlet sample that I've put out there, the first line says import the PowerShell module so you can actually use all the commandlets that we've defined. The second line downloads my credentials. And within your Live ID subscription that you create in Windows Azure, you can have multiple subscriptions. Each subscription is a separate billing entity, and you can treat them independently. So if you wanted to actually work on a specific subscription at any given point in time, you can select the subscription by name or by subscription ID. So in this case, I've selected my demo subscription. And within that demo subscription, I actually have a whole bunch of virtual machines. So if you actually wanted to see how it works, I have to run the first few lines just to get my subscription settings in place. By running this few lines, I've set the context that whatever commandlet I'm going to run is in the context of that particular subscription. And I can get a list of all the virtual machines. So by running this particular commandlet, it's going to list all the virtual machines that are running in my subscription. So I can pick the virtual machine by name and perform any operation on that virtual machine. So in my subscription, I have about 25 virtual machines running right now. So I'm going to pick this test VM2 that I'm going to be using for the rest of my demo for at least an ACL's perspective. So in the second part of the script, what we've done is we've actually defined an ACL config, which is like a template where you can define multiple rules and then apply the template on the particular endpoint that you've defined for your virtual machine. So in this case, I've actually set a rule. Set a rule that allows traffic only from the 131.107.64.111 IP address. And that's, since it's behind my DTAP, I called it my DTAP. And I've added it to the ACL rule, the template that I've created. I can actually add a lot more rules to that ACL set, and I can say permit this IP address, deny this IP address, and so on. Just to keep things simple, I'm just going to allow traffic from that public IP address and block things from all the other IP addresses. So I know that my virtual machine, I said, was called test VM2. I'm actually going to add an endpoint to that virtual machine, and I'm going to open up port 80. And I'm going to apply this ACL on it. So when I run this PowerShell script, all it's doing is setting the context for my subscription, creating that template, adding the rule to the template, modifying the endpoint on that particular virtual machine that I've created, and it's then getting it just to make sure that the configuration has been set appropriately. So what you're seeing in screen is basically the rule. It's taking a few seconds for it to go and set all the properties of the virtual machine. Once it's done, it's going to list all the properties of the endpoint. The last statement in my script says get properties of the endpoint. So by doing this, I can validate the fact that the ACL has actually been set. So it's actually the operation of setting the ACL has actually succeeded. So if I wanted to view my endpoint properties, it lists out all the properties of all the endpoints that I have. So Web 80 was the endpoint on which I was actually applying the ACL. And if you can see, the list actually says my DTAP. Now I'm going to connect to this exact server from this machine, which is not having that IP address. So just to make sure my browser cache is empty, I'm flushing the browser cache. It's going to try to connect, and then in a few seconds, it's going to time out. So in a matter of seconds, you can actually set your ACLs, and I'm not able to connect to here. But on the other hand, let's connect to the machine that actually has that IP address. So this is the machine that's actually sitting in my office that has the 131.IP address that we set in the ACL. And I'm going to specify the same IP address. And you're able to connect. So we've set the ACL. In a matter of seconds, the ACL's got applied, and it works. So now let's get back and let's talk about hybrid. So as I mentioned earlier in the session, hybrid means a lot of things. Hybrid essentially from our perspective means you have a multi-tier application where certain tiers of your service are, you know, in different locations. Typically some in your premises and some running in the cloud or some running in a third-party location. And you could connect them in very many different ways, depending on what your application pattern is and how you've architected your solution. If you're actually replicating data, there are a lot of options. One of them is SQL Azure Data Sync that lets you replicate your on-prem database to your databases in the cloud. Another way to do a truly distributed application is to use the PubSub model. You could use what we have is called a service bus. If you're writing applications, you can use this PubSub model to build a distributed application and have them communicate through the service bus. But if you already have an existing application, and one of the goals that we had when we did infrastructure as a service was that you should not even write a single line of code to be able to set up a multi-tier application or take your existing application and move certain tiers of it to the cloud. For you to be able to do that, you need connectivity at the infrastructure level. So we have two solutions, or we had two solutions that made it possible. The first of them was Windows Azure Connect. It enabled machine-to-machine connectivity using an IPv6 relay network. And the second solution we have is Windows Azure Virtual Networks, which enables you to connect site-to-site using a VPN, site-to-site industry standard VPN network. Now, we've had Windows Azure Connect in preview for about 2 years now. We learned a lot from the experience, but we realized that it had certain deficiencies that made it not suitable for a lot of applications. So what we did was we actually wanted to replace it with the newer technology that was based on all the investments we made for virtual networks. So we actually extended our virtual networks capability to do this point-to-site connectivity. So you can connect from any machine from anywhere to your virtual networks running in the cloud. We'll talk more about these two capabilities, but you have to be aware of the fact that Windows Azure Connect, if any of you are using it, we are planning to retire that service by the end of next week. So just a show of hands, how many of you have used Connect in the past? And do you still have anything connected, or is it all gone? That's great. So we will continue to make investments in these two areas, and you will see new connectivity modes introduced in the platform. But what I wanted to convey with this slide was the fact that all our technologies in terms of connectivity are going to be centered around the investments we've made on virtual networks, which actually complements all the investments we've made in compute in terms of virtual machines. So any connectivity solution we put together will be coupled with our virtual networks product line. So with that, let's talk about point-to-site connectivity first, and then we will move on to talk about site-to-site connectivity. Now, when we started off, we wanted a quick and dirty way to enable developers. We highlighted the dev test scenario here because we wanted a very simple way to enable prototyping in the cloud. If you wanted resources, buying hardware was not a very easy option. You can spin up virtual machines in the cloud in a matter of minutes, use them, tear them down, and move on. And we wanted connectivity to be as simple as setting up a virtual machine on demand and tearing it down on demand. And that was the motivation. We had a few other goals when we set it up. It was the fact that no installation of software. You shouldn't be installing any third-party software or any software you download from us to be able to set up connectivity. The third thing is developers or whoever is doing this prototyping work typically sit behind NATs, proxies, and firewalls. So you need the ability to traverse these NATs, proxies, and firewalls to be able to connect to your networks and services that you have running in the cloud. So these were our goals, and that kind of helped us come up with a solution that is what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. So we already, when we started off on this path to do this point-to-site connectivity, we'd invested on site-to-site connectivity. So we had a virtual network that ran in the cloud. We had a gateway service. Now, the gateway service we run is actually a pair of virtual machines per virtual network. So every virtual network you create in your subscription, we create a pair of virtual machines to act as your gateway. The reason we have a pair of virtual machines is because they run in active-passive mode. So at any given point in time, if we have to take down a virtual machine to patch it or update it or the host in which it's running gets corrupted, we should have the ability to fail over. And we typically fail over in about 30 seconds. So the downtime you expect should be around 30 seconds if something catastrophic happens. We already invested heavily, and that's a Windows-based solution. So we had a lot of investments in Microsoft that we'd made around routing and remote access services, which is actually a Windows Server role. We wanted to see if we could actually take advantage of the investments we'd made there to be able to enable this point-to-site connectivity. So what we actually did was there was a protocol called SSTP, a Secure Sockets Tunneling Protocol. This protocol was designed a couple of Windows releases back to enable you to traverse NATs and proxies. So from a NATs perspective or a web firewall's perspective, it looks like an SSL connection, but it's actually a tunnel through which we can send IP traffic back and forth. And the good thing is this is supported in pretty much every Windows box from Windows Server 2008 and Windows Vista, I think. And it's built into the Windows stack, the Windows Core TCP/IP stack. So we didn't have to actually write any software to take advantage of it. And we knew for a fact that the clients that's out there, which is pretty typically Windows machines, already had the software built into it. So all we had to do was push a configuration package that would enable us to point your machine's SSTP stack to point to the gateway that we are running in the cloud for your virtual network. So that's what you'll download from the Windows Azure portal to enable connectivity. We'll talk through the whole process and what it takes to set this up. So just to reiterate what I just said, you should be able to connect from anywhere securely, no software installations. It should be easy to set up, and you should be able to set it up and tear it down in minutes. And you should be once you set up an environment, you should be able to use it for production. So if you're relying on-prem resources, you should be able to do site-to-site plus point-to-site together. And this is what led us to actually designing the solution the way we did. And as I mentioned earlier, the target scenario is dev test. So I'm going to skip this animated slide. You can look at it later. But I'm going to actually walk you through all these steps in setting up a virtual network with point-to-site connectivity right now. This time, I'm going to use the Windows Azure portal to show you how easy it is to set up a virtual network with point-to-site connectivity in Windows Azure. So we are back to the familiar Windows Azure portal if you've used it in the past. And just the way you create virtual machines, you could just click on New, Networks, Virtual Network. And there are different ways in which you can actually create virtual networks in Windows Azure. The first thing is you could actually click through a Windows Azure wizard. We'll walk through the wizard in a minute. But if you already know how your network should look, we have a schema that we've published in MSDN. You can follow the schema, author up a network configuration file, and import the network configuration file into Windows Azure. So that way you can create multiple networks in one shot if you know how the network should look and feel. And The wizard actually, in the back end, creates this network configuration file for you and submits it on your behalf in Windows Azure. So let's actually do this custom create, which is going to walk you through the wizard. So just for the sake of this demo, let's create a virtual network in the North Europe, one of the regions in Europe, and set up point-to-site and site-to-site connectivity for this virtual network. I'm going to call it my demo VNet. I'm going to place it in an affinity group. An affinity group is a soft concept we have that tells us to group resources together. So if you have storage, compute, virtual networks, and all that, if you wanted them all to be placed in the same geolocale, we'd ask you to create an affinity group. So we want to create an affinity group. Let's create it in the North Europe region. I just gave it a name, and I move on. So it now asks me whether I want to have point-to-site, site-to-site, or neither. I could have a standalone virtual network with neither of them present, or I could have them with both point-to-site and site-to-site. Just to show you the whole thing, let's do both site-to-site and point-to-site. And in addition, just a few minutes back, I talked about the ability to run DNS servers in Windows Azure or use your on-prem DNS resources. You could give a DNS server's name and a DNS server's IP address, and every time you create a virtual machine, we'd populate that, and you could give up to 10 DNS servers, I think, in the platform. I'm just saying every time you create a virtual machine, plumb this as the DNS server for the virtual machine you place in this virtual network. So we said we want point-to-site connectivity and site-to-site connectivity. So if you actually look at the network, you have a virtual network for which you're going to provide IP addresses. You have an on-premises network, again, for which you're going to provide IP addresses. But I want roaming VPN clients that have to be part of the same network. So I need a dedicated set of IP addresses from which I can assign IP addresses to these machines that you connect to. So when you VPN in, the VPN interface in your machine needs an IP address from an IP address range. So you can have up to about 256 VPN clients that are roaming that can connect to your virtual network in Azure. So I can specify an IP address range. I can specify any private IP address range. So I could pick between one of these three things or modify them. So let's say I wanted to do 10.10.0.0/24. So I get about 254 IP addresses that I can use to assign for my roaming VPN clients. The next thing I do is I want to set up my on-prem. I think the one thing that I did in the past was automatically select my on-prem, but let's do that right now. So at this point in time, I want to specify what my network looks like in fields in my premises. I need an address range to which I have to route to from the virtual network in Azure. I need the public IP address of the VPN gateway to which I have to connect to. We'll talk about the VPN devices in a minute, but I need a public IP address. So let's say I had a network where I had an IP address. I'm just making up an IP address. And I need to specify the IP address range. Let's say I had 192. And I had about 256 IP addresses in my office. I set a /24 subnet. This is the IP address of all the virtual machines that I have, or physical machines, or anything that I have in my premises. So I specify that IP address range. I can add multiple ranges if I wanted to that are connected behind this VPN device. And the next thing I do is specify IP addresses for the virtual machines that I want to place in my virtual network in Windows Azure. So I could create a network, and I could say, I want to use 10.0.0.0. And I want to use 256 IP addresses in my virtual network in Windows Azure. I could do a /8, which gives me the entire 10-dot space, but I chose to do a smaller one. Within that, when we talked about virtual networks, we could actually carve out smaller subnets. So if I wanted to build a multi-tier application in the virtual network or build multiple multi-tier applications, I could place all my front ends in a subnet so that I can apply a policy maybe or whatever I wanted to do. So I could create a front end subnet. And let's say I wanted a slash 28. I'm going to have 16 VMs. That could be my front end. I could add a middle tier, which could be an app tier. That could, again, be 16 VMs. I could have a SQL subnet where I could have 16 VMs. And in the end, I need connectivity. So I need, as I talked about, we actually have two VPN gateways that we run in your virtual network. They have to be part of your network. So we need you to give us some IP addresses within your network into which we can place these VPN gateways. So you have to create a gateway subnet in your virtual network. And that's it. So you've actually created, by a few clicks through the portal and by filling this wizard, we've actually created a virtual network in Windows Azure that has the ability to do both point-to-site and site-to-site connectivity. Now, it's ready. So let's click on the network. And it's going to give you a dashboard view of what the network looks like. It shows me this diagram. I still don't have my VPN gateway set up yet. So all I have to do is click on this create option in my virtual network, and it starts creating the VPN gateway. When you click on that button, it actually starts deploying two virtual machines and starts configuring them as your VPN devices and sets up all the routes to be able to route back and forth between the virtual machines that you have that you will be deploying in the virtual network. Now, since this is going to take time, I already have another virtual network that looks pretty similar to this that I've set up. We can follow the rest of the steps from there. So in this particular virtual network, I configured it to point to an RRAS server that's running in my office for site-to-site connectivity, and we'll configure point-to-site connectivity right now. Now, as I said, it's like a VPN. Any machine can connect to this virtual network that we have in the cloud. So I should be able to trust you to be able to allow you to connect to me. So I want mutual authentication to happen. For me to mutually authenticate you, I could do it in different ways, and we chose to do it using certificates. So we asked you to generate a pair of certificates and give us a certificate so that we can actually use them for authentication. So when you have a network like this, you could actually go to this tab on top that says certificates and upload the certificate that you want. You could actually pick a certificate from your machine and actually upload the certificate. I've already uploaded a certificate, but it's just uploading a SIR file that you generate. We have instructions in the Windows Azure page that tell you how to generate these certificates. These are simple self-signed certificates, and the tools are also available in the Windows SDK that you can download from the Microsoft website. So you generate a root certificate, which is what you're going to give us. You're going to give us a root certificate with a public key, and from that root certificate, you can generate as many child certificates as you want. And these are the certificates you will deploy into every one of your machines from which you want to connect to your network in Windows Azure. So you generate a pair of certificates, you give us one, you deploy the other on your machine so that we know how to connect. Once the certificate has been uploaded, you are actually ready to download the VPN client. We actually generate a VPN client package that is just configuration script. It is zero code that tells the inbox VPN client in your machine how to connect to this virtual network in Windows Azure. So if you have a 64-bit machine, you could do 64-bit. If you want a 32-bit machine, you could do 32-bit. So when you click that button, we start generating the package, so it takes a few seconds. In a few seconds, the package would be ready for you to download. It is ready to download, so I'm just going to run it. This package that we generate is actually not signed. We can't sign a package using the Microsoft root certificates for trust. So if you are going to distribute this package to a lot of people in your organization, you can download it and sign it using the root. It's perfectly safe to run this application even without having it signed. So I'm going to run it without having it signed. And it's going to deploy the configuration script into my machine. It's ready. So it's deployed the VPN client package into my machine. All I have to do is right now connect. So I have this VPN connection that has the name of my virtual network, and all I do is click on connect. It brings up a dialog box. So I'm now connected to this virtual network that I have running in my Azure subscription. Now, if you look at it in this subscription, I have another small SharePoint farm that's running. I could connect to it using the private IP addresses. So let's say my SharePoint frontend is 10.0.0.4. Without actually having to go through the internet, from the VPN connection I set up, I can securely connect to my virtual network and any resource within my virtual network. This is particularly useful when you do dev test kind of work. So one of the demos that I did in an earlier talk earlier this week was actually showing a SharePoint load test. So you could actually configure a SharePoint farm, generate load using Visual Studio, load testing capabilities in Visual Studio, hit the public IP address of your SharePoint farm, but gather statistics from your machines using the private channel that you've established. So if you did not want to expose your SQL Server or your domain controller or your middle tier, you could actually connect to those tiers using this private channel you set up and have the actual load test run on your public IP address. So there are a lot of things and a lot of possibilities that you can use this for dev test purposes. So it's just asking me to log into the SharePoint farm. So I guess you get the picture. So let's move on to the next part. Let's talk about site-to-site connectivity. This was a capability that we first introduced as part of our infrastructure services preview release. And earlier this year, we made it generally available. So it does come with an SLA. We offer you a gateway uptime SLA of 99.9%, which translates to about, worst case, about 5 minutes downtime per week. And that's actually not bad. It's actually got significant adoption in the sense that about a third of all the virtual machines we run in Azure actually sit in virtual networks today, and that ratio keeps increasing. So we see a larger number of virtual machines running in virtual networks, and quite a sizable number of those virtual networks have cross-prem connectivity using the site-to-site solution. So it's actually being heavily used in production right now. And when we started off, we supported out-of-the-box a policy-based VPN that did Ike V1 for authentication. So we typically supported a few standard Cisco and Juniper devices. And with this release, we are actually going to, in a few more slides, we'll talk about some of the exciting new devices that we've introduced, we've added support for, and some of the exciting stuff we've also done in addition to that. So the reason for doing site-to-site is the fact that it's now enabling connectivity between your premises and the cloud. We talked about it in detail. One of the key factors that we realized was that Active Directory and identity was a glue to actually migrate any applications. People were pretty reluctant to actually move their domain controllers into the cloud. So if you were to shift your application, you could move all the other tiers, but have your domain controller in your premises and use this tunnel to actually use it for authentication. People who were actually a little bit more gutsy actually deployed their own domain controllers as read-only domain controllers in Windows Azure. And this read-only domain controller you set up in Windows Azure could actually replicate with the domain controllers you had on-premises. You could also use SCOM and other monitoring software that you're used to on-premises to monitor any virtual machines that you run in Azure and use this channel to actually feed back data to your premises. So again, when we started off infrastructure as a service, there were a few workloads that we really cared about. People wanted to actually use SQL Server in the cloud. And with infrastructure services, we enabled full SQL capability. But SQL 2012 came up with a few exciting options around SQL HA, high availability. And for you to be able to configure a SQL HA cluster in Azure, you needed a domain controller, which automatically meant you needed a virtual network. So in order to enable you to run SQL servers in Windows Azure in a HA configuration, you needed a virtual network. One more thing I mentioned earlier in the talk was the fact that when we started off designing our infrastructure services offering, the goal for us was to actually be able to run a full SharePoint, highly available SharePoint farm in Windows Azure. And that meant we could run a multi-tier application that used identity, a shared database source, and so on. And in talking to a lot of people like you, we realized that SharePoint is still one of the hottest products that people want to deploy in the cloud. So we optimized the solution to make sure SharePoint actually runs really well. And one of the demos I'm going to be showing in a bit actually is a highly available SharePoint form. So we released infrastructure as a service in generally available mode. Virtual networks was part of that offering. And what it meant was it came with an SLA. But it was still a policy-based VPN, and we only supported Cisco and Juniper devices and a small subset of those devices. So in the last few months, we've been at work, and what we did was with this point-to-site capability, we added the support to be able for you to use route-based VPN devices, which meant that the matrix of VPN devices that we could support on the platform expanded significantly. And we'll talk about some of the new devices we added. In addition, we had a lot of demand for people to run soft VPN devices, be it our own software solution or be it a third-party solution. And they wanted to see a first-party solution from Microsoft. And we already had RRAS as a VPN solution that existed for several years. So when we introduced this route-based VPN capability in the platform, we could actually enable Windows Server 2012 RRAS to run as a site-to-site VPN solution. So going back quickly to the demo machine, the SharePoint is connected, whatever we started connecting. In this case, for this, I said I configured a site-to-site connection as well, and it uses RRAS. It's very simple to download a VPN configuration script from the Windows Azure portal, select the platform, and say download. This is actually going to give you a PowerShell script that you can actually run in your virtual machine. So this exact PowerShell script that you downloaded is running in this routing and remote access server that I set up. It's actually configured a VPN tunnel to my virtual machine and is running. All I had to do was download that PowerShell script, fill in a few parameters that I actually needed, which is the IP address and the pre-shared key to authenticate. Those are values that I have to stick in somewhere here. Once I stuck those in and the document tells you how to do it, the machine or the virtual machine or the physical machine in which you're running Windows Server 2012 will be configured as an RRAS server and acts as your site-to-site VPN. So it's as simple as that. So in addition to enabling RRAS as a VPN device and introducing policy route-based VPN, we had a lot of people who wanted stronger encryption schemes for compliance purposes. We only supported IQv1 with AES-128. With this release, we support IQv2 for authentication and AES-256, which is a stronger encryption algorithm for the VPN tunnel. So any device that does AES-256 or 128 or triple DES would work with our solution. And we've added more VPN devices. We actually have a team from F5 here, and we worked with F5 to do some of the demos here. We'll talk about that in a bit. But as I mentioned earlier, we started with just Cisco and Juniper. We're happy to announce support for all these additional VPN devices, you know, over the last month. That said, you know, we have an industry standard VPN implementation. So any VPN device that follows industry standard IPsec specifications that's not listed here should technically work with that solution. We've added these devices, and we talk about these devices only because we've jointly gone through validation with these vendors. And, you know, we know it works. The company knows it works, and they know how to support it if something goes wrong. They have documentation that tells you how to configure these things. So you should go to, you know, let's say an F5's website and take a look at how you could actually configure a big IP device to be a VPN device. And, you know, the F5 folks are actually sitting in the back. You should talk to them if you're interested. And they have great documentation, and they helped us set up a cool demo that we'll go through next. So let's look at a series of demos. So for this, I showed you site-to-site using RRAS. But for the next demo, I'm actually going to show you site-to-site connectivity. One of the problems with site-to-site connectivity that we have is the fact that we have high availability in our site. But on the premises side, we have the ability to have only a single VPN tunnel, which is a single point of failure on your side. And working with our friends in F5, they have a solution where you could actually configure the F5 big IP devices in active-passive configuration. So if one of the devices goes down, you could actually fail over to another VPN device. And for this demo, I'm going to use a third F5 that actually acts as a load balancer and load balances between two SharePoint farms. Really, what I'm trying to show here is the fact that We have an intranet-facing SharePoint form that's highly available. I've created two virtual networks in two different regions, one in US East and one in US West. Each SharePoint form by itself is highly available. We'll go through each of these in great detail. So I have two front-end VMs running in each virtual network. I have two domain controllers that are replicated. I have two application servers for SharePoint and a SQL HA cluster with two instances and one more VM for Quorum. So all these per region, and I have that replicated in two different regions. And we've configured the load balancer to load balance between the four front ends that I have. So you hit the SharePoint form from your premises, it could land in either region. So even if a complete region goes down, you would be able to connect to the SharePoint form that's hosted in another region. So let's see how that works. The reason you saw so many virtual machines in my subscription was because I have two highly available SharePoint forms running in them. So anything that you see USE is in the US East data center. There are two domain controllers, if you look at them. They are configured to be in an availability set, which means we place them in different fault and update domains, so they're always... We guarantee at least one instance of these two virtual machines is always up and running at any given point in time. So every tier in that is actually replicated. So if you look at the app tier, we have two instances, again, in another availability set. The web front end, let's look at the web front end here. The web front end is where we're exposing the SharePoint form to the public internet. So we've defined an endpoint on port 80 and we've load balanced it. So this way, the SharePoint form can be connected from the public internet as well. And we have SQL servers, a pair of SQL servers that are clustered, and another SQL server for Quorum. So every tier in my service is highly available. And to account for disaster recovery, we have replicated the setup in two different regions. And these two sit in two different virtual networks. One is the TechEd VNet 1, and the other is TechEd VNet 2. They're both connected to the same premises that's my office. We'll look at the boxes that are actually establishing the VPN tunnel. So it's connected and it's actually sending data back and forth. Now, this is my Hyper-V machine that has these F5 instances running in them. So you see Big IP1 and Big IP2, these two are my load balancers, it's the VPN devices that are configured in active passive mode. So let's start with the load balancer first. So this is a single instance of the load balancer that we've configured. You can configure them in redundant pairs as well. But just to show you the fact that the SharePoint form is actually configured, there's a virtual endpoint that I configured, 10.1.0.10. That's going to be my HTTP endpoint that I'm going to use for my SharePoint front end. So if I hit that private IP address from this simulated on-prem environment, it's going to be load balanced across my four front ends. And you can see that in the machine pools that we have, the SharePoint front end. I have two front ends in US East and two front ends in US West. And actually, it's a great time to show you the demo. For some reason, the US West instances seem to be down. So if we were to connect to the SharePoint form, you should still be able to connect to it and have it work. So let's hit the front end. It looks like the tunnel to one of the virtual networks is down. So though the tunnel is down, we are able to connect to the SharePoint farm because it's load balanced, and it's able to connect to the US East SharePoint farm since the US West connectivity is down. Now, assuming the entire SharePoint, the VPN device that's hosting connectivity went down, this is the VPN device that's in active, and its state is synchronized with the other VPN device. So we can force it to go to standby. And when we do that, there's going to be a momentary, there's going to be a short time where the tunnel goes down, and the other instance will become active. So if you look at it, the state of this will change to standby. And this one, when we log in, is actually online and active. It will immediately try, the transformation on the F5 side took a matter of seconds for it to make the other one active, and it will try to reestablish the tunnel. There is going to be about a minute, we are trying to minimize the time, a minute or two of downtime that it takes for the tunnel to be renegotiated. Once the tunnel is renegotiated, the connectivity will be back up, and you will actually start seeing both tunnels re-established from the new VPN device. So this way, you first of all have DR across sites, and secondly, you have two redundant devices, so if one device goes down, you will have a momentary downtime, but it's not like the whole site went down. It will fail over to another device. So the whole thing that I showed you right now is caught as a video. You can look at this video, and it shows you all the steps that we went through. So in summary, basically, hybrid is going to enable a lot of cool things for a lot of enterprises. And you know, this is our attempt at our very first attempt at giving you a hybrid solution in Windows Azure. Treat Windows the virtual networks in Windows Azure as an extension of your premises to the cloud. We call it the networking on-ramp to enable you to migrate your applications from your premises to the cloud. You can bring your own IP addresses and not worry about others using same IP addresses having the ability to look at your network. Each virtual network in Windows Azure is completely isolated and secure from the rest of the deployments in Windows Azure. You can use site-to-site connectivity. We use industry standard IPsec protocols today. We have new VPN devices that are established that we've started supporting. You could use them to connect to your virtual networks and extend your networks between your premises and the cloud. If you wanted to do rapid prototyping, we have the point-to-site solution to which you can connect from anywhere, literally. You could traverse NATs and proxies and firewalls, and you could use it for dev test purposes. It uses SSTP, so there is no need for software installation at all. So we've introduced support only for Windows-based machines. We're working hard to add support for other platforms and have a good solution there as well. So with that, you know, the point-to-site solution is a preview solution. We urge you all to try it out. In fact, if you had stopped by the Windows Azure booths in the demo stations there, you would have actually seen a competition thing. One of the exercises there is to actually set up this point-to-site, which you saw how to set up, how easy it is to set up. So it's actually pretty easy to get things going and prototyping and do everything. That said, it's a product that's still in preview. We're working to make it generally available. So any feedback you have on this product, feel free to email me or this email alias that we've listed here. We actively take your feedback to make the product better. That said, anything around networking connectivity, feel free to email us, and we'd be more than happy to listen to you, respond to you, and address concerns that you have on the platform. We've tried to do our best to document pretty much everything we've talked about. There is a tutorial for everything that I demoed here. Plus, there's additional tutorials that help you get started. Virtual networks and all the stuff around it are part of pretty much every tutorial in our training kits that we support in Windows Azure. We'd ask you to go there and also look at all the documentation. And feel free to reach out to us at any given point in time if you need any help about the platform. I know this is the last day and probably the last session on Windows Azure, But over the course of the last 4 days, we've had a series of sessions that covered various aspects of Windows Azure. So if you're going back, you can actually go and take a look at some of the sessions that you may have missed, and they should all talk about different aspects of Windows Azure. With that, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to take them. Thank you.